Good morning. I would like to welcome everyone. First will be our meeting in the San Diego Metropolitan Transit System Audit Oversight Committee. Let me ask the clerk to please call the roll.
Before I begin, members of the public can make a public comment using the raise hand feature during the agenda item or make a request for any item using the Q&A feature. Members of the public will have 3 minutes to speak during public comment. I will now repeat this in Spanish. Antes de comenzar, los miembros del público pueden hacer un comentario público utilizando la función raise hand o levantar la mano. Durante el artículo de la agenda o peticionar cualquier artículo utilizando la función Q&A o preguntas y respuestas. Los miembros del público tendrán 3 minutos para hacer su comentario. I will now call roll. Fletcher. Sotelo Solis. Ilo Rivera.
Present.
Hall.
Here.
Montgomery Stepp.
Here.
Salas. Sankey.
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Sotelo Solis was here. She just couldn't hit her mute button fast enough.
Great, thank you. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for the June 10th, 2021 meeting. Is there a second?
I'll second it, Ron Hall.
All right, we have a motion by myself, second by Member Hall. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right, that motion carries unanimously. We'll go to agenda item 3. I'll ask the clerk if we have any requests for non-agendized public communication for the Audit Oversight Committee meeting.
We have none, Chair.
All right, we're going to go to our only action item today. This is a consideration for us would be to receive the draft of fiscal year 2021 annual comprehensive financial report. With that, let me turn it over to our team for a presentation.
Good morning. My name is Erin Dunham, the controller here at MTS. Today, we are joined with our external auditors, the Poon Group. We have Coley Delaney and Ken Poon, and they will go through the approach they took to the audit, some key financial highlights, and their opinion of the audit. Ken, Coley.
Thank you, Erin. Again, thank you so much. And it's been another year again. This is a standard presentation for our audit for your consideration to accept to receive the audit for the fiscal year end June 30, 2021. So what we are going through today is actually talking about the standard communication with those charged with governance. We consider this AOC and the board is the those charged with governance, and so that we are required to go through the some of the audit responsibility on both management side and the auditor side. How we are going to address the auditor's responsibility and by looking at our audit approach. And very importantly, like we will actually give you a 30,000 foot level to oversee the to give you an overview of the financial statement, talking about the key pension and OPEB information. These two items is very significant to your financial statement, and we'll also give you the audit result and also give you a some update on what's going on at GASB here. So as let's talk about the audit responsibility. So as management yourself, you are fully responsible for these financial statements. By presenting these financial statements in accordance with generally accepted accounting principle in the United States of the America, GASB, the Governmental Accounting Standard Board, is the standard setting bodies for state local government. Therefore, MTS is abide by all the GASB pronouncement and adopting any new pronouncement that is required during the current fiscal year. This fiscal year, we do actually have like two pronouncements, including GASB 84 and GASB 90. GASB 84 has some impact to your financial statement. GASB 84 is the is regarding the fiduciary activities where the MTS actually taking control of some of the asset on behalf of the beneficiary. So based on the evaluation of the accounting transactions, as required by GASB 84, you are required to include the SDTC retirement plan, including in your financial statement, not combining with the primary government. And we will talk a little bit about that in your when we talk about the overview of the financial statement. And there has nothing, there's no impact on GASB 90, which is the majority equity interest. Therefore, it's not really quite applicable for MTS. You also need to adopt sound accounting policy and very importantly, all the significant accounting policy is also included in the notes to the financial statement. Very importantly, you also need to establish and maintain proper internal control over financial reporting and compliance to make sure that your financial statements are free from material misstatement, which is the last second bullet point, providing audit evidence to the amount and the disclosure to the financial statement. And because you do actually have a good internal control, also at the same time, this is another area that we focus on, is to see if you have control to prevent and detecting fraud. Our responsibility as the auditor is to perform the audit in accordance with generally accepted accounting auditing standard. And the standard applicable to the financial audit contains in government auditing standard. It is required for us to follow the government auditing standard because the MTS has spent more than $750,000 in federal expenditure. And also in your contract with us, we are required to perform the audit in accordance with government auditing standard. As required by the auditing standard, we also need to communicate with those charged with governance. Basically, we consider this board, the AOC and the board is those charged with governance, giving you a forum to ask us any questions that you may have. We also need to assess the audit risk of internal control on both financial reporting and compliance, determine the fair presentation of the financial statement, and render our audit opinion on the financial statement. And last but not least, if we identify any material weaknesses or significant deficiency in internal control, we are also required to put that in writing and provide that recommendation to you. In terms of the approach to the audit, as you can tell, there's a lot of auditing standard that we need to follow. And the audit approach basically break it down into four phases. The first phase is what we call the detailed planning. We pull out, look at our audit effort from the previous years, take a look at the new GASB pronouncement, discussing with management team to identify any unique transactions during the current fiscal year. Phase two is the interim phase, which is the phase that we look at internal control very closely. We did actually spend some time in May to talk about, like, to look at the internal control, including the financial reporting, look at how you deal with your bank reconciliation, how you post your journal entries, how you do your closing, looking at your revenue and expenses. Very importantly, MTS has tremendous amount of CIP project in the last couple of years. So capital asset and inventory become a significant transactions class. And we actually, in July, we did spend some time looking at your inventory and performing inventory observation. You do actually have a looking at the payroll and related liabilities, including the census data testing on both the OPEB for the OPEB liability and the pension liability, because you also have received a significant amount from the from federal. Therefore, we also need to look at the federal grant program to address our single audit issue. And last but not least is to evaluate your general IT control over your accounting system. Phase three is the validation of the account balance. Based on the risk assessed that we look at during interim, we are going to respond to the risk that we identify. Our team also used the AI audit approach. So in order Instead of just looking at the internal control over those significant transaction item in phase two that we look at, we are basically assessing risk down to the transactions level itself too. So based on the risk level, we test all the high risk area and then also select a sample on the medium risk that we identify within the system and perform testing to address all the assertions level within the financial statement. And last but not least is to review the financial statement and issue our audit report. Coley, I'm going to turn it over to you to go over the financial statement.
All right, thanks, Ken. So we're going to start off here. Start off with here is the summary statements of net position. And one thing that I'd like to point out that is different this year. So when you look up at the top there, it says summary statements of net position dash primary government. And that's a new thing for MTS this year, as Ken mentioned, that we did also per GASB 84, bring in the SDTC employee retirement plan into the actual financial statement document. However, those numbers are reported separately from MTS. So MTS is considered the primary government. That's what we're seeing here, 2021 over 2020, is that we have, for 2021, we have assets of $2.2 billion plus deferred outflows of resources, minus liabilities, minus deferred inflows of resources leads to a total net position for MTS at 6/30/2021 of $1.9 billion. For the assets, an increase of about $61 million was mainly due to an increase in capital assets of $91 million and a decrease in cash of $35 million. For the deferred outflows, pension deferred outflows increased over last year by $9 million. And liabilities are pretty similar to 2020. They were led by an increase in accounts payable of $9 million and a decrease in unearned revenue of $4 million. For the deferred inflows of resources, both pension and OPEB deferred inflows of resources were pretty similar to 2020. And so ultimately net position increased by $56 million versus last year, which we'll see on this next slide. All right, so here's essentially the summary statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in net position, or essentially the income statement. MTS continues to see operating revenues decreased due to lower passenger revenues due to COVID. Passenger revenues were down $31 million this year versus 2020. However, MTS did see an $80 million increase in non-operating revenues over 2020. And this was mainly made up of from an increase in federal revenues of $113 million from 2020 to 2021. And that was mainly from the Federal Transit Cluster CARES Act funding. Operating and non-operating expenses remained static, and MTS actually had positive income before capital contributions of $17 million this year, and ultimately the net position for MTS changed for the positive by $56 million. Next slide. So here's the summary statements of cash flows for MTS. So in the cash flows from operating activities, that's going to include your receipts from customers, payments to suppliers and employees, and payments for claims. This was a bigger negative in 2021, mainly due to a decrease in receipts from customers versus 2020. Non-capital financing activities includes public support. So this is going to be your federal grants, TDA, STA funds, Transnet, et cetera. Those cash flows increased by $92 million this year versus last year. And again, that's a significant portion of that is from CARES funding, CARES Act funding. For capital and related financing activities, the increase in cash flows this year of $73 million was mainly the increase in cash outflows this year was mainly of $73 million was mainly due to acquisition of capital assets. Cash flows from investing activities shows interest received on investments. And there was an overall decrease in cash and cash equivalents of $33 million in 2021 compared to a $2.9 million increase in 2020. So this is, as Ken mentioned earlier, this is something new this year. As I mentioned, so included this year is the San Diego Transit Corporation Employees Retirement Plan that was included due to GASB 84, which is entitled Fiduciary Activities. And so that GASB statement was implemented this year. So typically the SDTC pension report we issue in the December timeframe. And so what we're doing this year is actually accelerating a portion of that timeline to report their numbers in with the MTS financial statement. So assets of $205 million this year versus $166 million last year. And that's all your investments being held in a fiduciary capacity in order to pay distributions for benefits. The liabilities for the retirement plan are made up of an amount due to the plan sponsor or MTS for reimbursement. So total net position, which is actually restricted for payment of plan benefits, is $204 million at June 30, 2021. On the next slide is these changes in fiduciary net position for the retirement plan. And so what we see here, so additions are made up of contributions, both employer and employee contributions to the plan, were $25.6 million this year. A big change in net investment income. The plan had a very good year this year, $34.6 million. And then the plan paid out $21 million in distributions and had $200,000 of administrative expenses. So an actual positive change for the plan in the fiduciary net position this year of almost $39 million. So up next, is a key pension and OPEB information. As Kim mentioned, these are one of the larger liabilities on the MTS balance sheet. So what we're looking at here is a sensitivity analysis of the net pension liability. So what we're seeing here is that the middle piece there, where it says current discount rate and the net pension liability, that is what is actually recorded on MTS's books. So for MTS, the net pension liability is $15.1 million. For transit is $149 million. And the trolley has two plans. They have a PERS plan and a PARS plan. So the PERS liability is $37 million and the PARS liability is $1.4 million. Now these are each measured at, use different discount rates to calculate the net pension liability. Both MTS and SDTI plans as CalPERS plans use the CalPERS discount rate of 7.15%. PARS uses a more conservative 6.5%. And then a few years ago, the SDTC Pension Board voted to decrease their discount rate to 6.75% to be more conservative than CalPERS. But essentially what you see here is what would happen if how the net pension liability would change were the discount rate to drop by 1%, as like for example for MTS in that first column, if the discount rate went from 7.15% to 6.15%, the liability would jump from $15 million to $23 million. And in the other direction, if the discount rate were to increase 1% to 8.15%, then the liability would drop to $8.5 million. So when we look at the aggregate column, MTS has recorded on their books $203 million of net pension liability, and if we were to drop the discount rate by 1%, that would increase to $270 million, and to increase it 1%, it would drop to $146 million. On the next slide is a comparison of pension expense by plan year over year. What you see there is that pension expense actually did drop a little bit this year. And the allocation amongst the plans, MTS, the two SDTI plans and SDTC are pretty similar year over year. This slide is essentially for OPEB sensitivity analysis, which is the same idea as what we just talked about for pension. Total OPEB liability for MTS that is recorded amongst MTS, SDTI, and SDTC is $53 million. If we drop that rate 1%, it would go up to $62 million. And if that rate were to increase 1%, it would go to 46.4. On the next slide, again, this is the OPEB expense that was recorded this year. And so a comparison 2021 versus 2020. $3.4 million in OPEB expense compared to $2.9 million in 2020. So I'll flip it back over to Ken to go over the audit results.
So the audit result is after we perform all the audit procedures, we do actually have two opinions unit. So for both the fiduciary activities and the primary government, we issue an unmodified opinion, state that the financial statement are fairly presented in all material respect in accordance with generally accepted accounting principle. All the significant accounting policy have been consistently applied, including the implementation of the new GASB pronouncement. All the estimates are reasonable and the disclosure are properly reflected in these financial statements. Other results, we do not have any disagreement with management. There are no material weaknesses or significant deficiency in internal control were noted, and we don't have any accounting issues. So the next slide before we conclude our presentation is also giving you a taste of what GASB is actually having for the next couple of years. So the next slide is pretty much.
Can we hold off on that and see if any of the committee members have any questions about the audit itself?
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you, Sharon. Let me open it up to see if we have any questions from anyone online who is here surrounding the audit. All right, not seeing anyone. Oh, Mr. Sankey.
Would you pop over to slide 11, please? Thank you. A question about the deficit, I think, is the what I wanted to know about. It's a significant change year over year, and I hope you can address it. That's 11, yeah. So we went from 2.9 plus to a $33 million negative. Help me understand why that number looks so bad year over year. Is it, if it's COVID, just say COVID.
No, it's not COVID. I mean, this number will change on a year to year basis. It's the change in cash flows. So you have, a balance of, let's say, $100 million in 2020. And that just based upon, accounts payable and the number of bills that come in and the timing of which those bills come in, our balance could be $70 million in 2021. So that's a net change of $30 million.
So just a number that's going to be changing because of the date, basically.
Correct. And okay. It's not a balanced number. It's a change in year over year cash flow.
Well, and Larry, on the big summary sheet, there's also a $47 million, it's on the restricted side, but $47 million deficit. Would that be the number we would call our structural deficit?
We talked a little bit about this at the Budget Development Committee.
Exactly.
We're expecting about a structural deficit of about $50 million going forward. So yeah, those are areas where we have some time to bridge the gap to bring those revenues and expenses back into alignment to get that sustainability. Okay. But yeah, for the time being, we have CARES Act to bridge that gap. But yeah, to your point, we do have a structural deficit that we need to address.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not seeing any requests from online. Please continue.
Sure, no problem. Let me go back to the... All right, so these are the upcoming standards that GASB actually have in place for the next couple of years. The biggest ticket item here is GASB 87 on lease accounting and GASB 96 on subscription-based IT arrangement. Those two are actually looking into the leases, and then also the arrangement is very similar to leases because nowadays with the new accounting standard for leases, they get rid of all the determination between capital leases versus operating leases. Operating leases in the past is really what we call the off balance sheet financing, and it's not really showing up on the face of a financial statement. With the new lease accounting, that's actually getting rid of the differentiation between both the capital leases versus the operating leases. In order for us to book the leases, it's kind of treated like all leases will be recorded on the face of a financial statement, but also at the same time, we'll book a associate corresponding lease asset as a right to use those asset on your balance sheet. So basically the liability is not what we call the off the books financing. Everything will be on the face of a financial statement. And that's also include both lessor, being a lessor and lessee. So if you are a lessor, you are also required to book the receivable and also the associate deferred inflow, the resource, and capture the revenue based on the systematic method. Same thing for 96, because most of the IT arrangement now is what is more of a subscription based. The similar concept like 87. So basically, some of the arrangement that needs to go onto the balance sheet instead of a off book financing too. So these two are the biggest ticket item. 89, interest costs incurred before the end of a construction period, since MTS doesn't have any debt that is relating to the besides the capital leases, but there's really nothing that we need to worry about the construction costs that we need to do capitalized interest. 91, conduit debt obligation. The MTS doesn't issue any conduit debt. 92 is actually some minor adjustment on different GASB. 93, replacement on interbank offer rate. So as you know, LIBOR rate is going to phase out, and there will be another interbank offer rate index will be replacing the LIBOR rate. So 93 is going to address that one. But also, since you don't actually do any type of interest rate swap and all that kind of stuff, 93 become not applicable to MTS. And 94 is public-private partnership and public-public partnership. So that's effective in 2023. And 97 is they amend the criteria to be a components unit, and then also take a closer look at 457 plan to make sure that there's really no fiduciary activities to be included in your fiduciary fund financial statement. So those are the upcoming standard. And also for this year, MTS also implement GASB Statement 98, which changed the name from Comprehensive Annual Financial Report to Annual Comprehensive Financial Report. Just the acronym change, and that's pretty much what 98 is all about. And that's also the GASB Key Research Project is the financial reporting model, which has nothing to do with MTS, because they talk a lot more on the governmental account, like governmental activities within the financial statement, which MTS is only a business type activities. The next biggest project is the revenue expense recognition. In the future, GASB is kind of mirroring the FASB standard on the commercial side, because on the commercial side, businesses are now reporting based on performance obligations, while government is not. So in the future, the new GASB project is to mirror what the FASB rule and the international rule, and converting the way that we recognize revenue in for the government sector. So basically, this is a big project. And then also in the near future, there are two projects, including the capital asset reporting and then the condition reporting. That is also on under the radar of GASB. So that's conclude our presentation. These are our contact information, and we are more than happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. I appreciate all the work, the presentation, and the attentiveness we have as an agency towards this. Not seeing any requests to speak, I'll make a motion for us to receive the report. Is there a second? Oh, of course, Member Ilorvea, please.
I just had one question. The standards that are coming online in the next few years, how does MTS kind of look forward to ensure that we know which we need to comply with, or not comply with, but I'm just kind of curious how we take that into account.
So we do attend the Poon Group puts on a seminar annually that we attend, and they go over them and we work with them directly. We've been working on 87 for about probably 6 months now. A lot of them, because we do not do governmental accounting, a lot of them do not impact us, as Ken mentioned, but we do work closely with the auditors to make sure we're compliant.
Got it. So I know that this is related to accounting. I'm really kind of intrigued by 94. And to what extent there's communication between staff and the board about trends in terms of what may or may not be good practices in one area or another. I guess that's just something that we can communicate with you all and ask questions about on a regular basis. But Sharon, is there, really big picture, when do you find out about these things and kind of relay them back to us as important shifts that might impact MTS and the way we do business here?
Yeah, I mean, I can have Aaron speak to this, but on a rolling basis, we try to bring forward these to the audit committee and the executive committee and then the board as they come up. As Aaron mentioned, 87 is the big one of these. She's been very attentive to this one for some time. Mm-hmm. And there's certain ones that, you know, like when they changed the liability rules, that was a huge one. And so we would bring that more frequently up with board presentations. Some of these are insignificant, meaning yep. that they don't address us at all, or there are things that are just really housekeeping type stuff. So we wouldn't really bring that to the board as much. But if you have specific questions about number 94, we could get a little bit of deeper dive right now from Ken.
I don't want to do that to everyone right now.
This is why you're on this committee.
Okay.
Yeah. And
if that's all right, we don't have to go super, super deep, but I am curious. And thank you, Sharon, for that update.
Yeah, and we are more than happy to invite you to attend any of our training because over the years, like for example, certain topics that we actually do a focused training, we do actually on an annual basis around June or July timeframe to go over like the highlight level on all the GASB pronouncement that took about like 2 hours. But for some of the session, like for example, GASB 87, we already have 2 sessions talking about 87, was it really a deep dive on the pronouncement itself? And then also the second session on GASB 87 is talking about the implementation and then bring you the resource, including our partners, Lee's Query, to go over some of the challenging issue when we implement lease accounting. And then we are working on the session number 3, talking about the journal entries and the disclosure. So that is something. Sometimes if we identify a big GASB pronouncement, we do have a deep dive of training for our clients, including MTS here. And you're also being invited if you like.
Yeah, and Ken, correct me if I'm wrong, but GASB 94, you know, the GASB pronouncement will be, what is the accounting treatment of certain public-private partnership transactions, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so it's more of, you know, when these public-private partnerships get agreed upon, how do we as a financial entity or the financial statements, how do those get reflected within the financial statements?
Correct.
And on a very 40,000 foot level, that's essentially what that GASB pronouncement is going to be.
Yeah, and all these GASB pronouncements is all surrounding the accounting transactions, how you record things in accordance with GAAP. So basically, when we talk about the public-private partnership and public-public partnership, we are not talking about the agreement. It's basically, I know legally, you do when the partnership being created, that means there may be some creative terms that is included in the agreement itself, but overall, GASB actually take a step into it and also giving some guideline and accounting like the what you need to do accounting like on the accounting, how you do your debits and credits, and then also the disclosure itself is more focused on the disclosure. So that's why, like for example, GASB 68, we have almost like 10 pages note in the financial statement giving using the four plans that you have. So that's actually giving the guideline for a financial statement preparer to address what needs to be included in your financial statement.
Thank you.
Good. All right. Yeah, no, wonderful. And yeah, any issues, spend as much time as we need. Okay, so not seeing anyone else, I've got a motion by myself, seconded by member Elo Rivera to receive the report. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, any abstentions? All right, that carries unanimously. Our next meeting date is TBD. And with that, the Audit Oversight Committee will stand adjourned. Thank you all for the work.